Good morning. Another beautiful Sunday morning. I will be out on the golf course at Kearney Hill in just a little while, and I can't wait. It's Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5. And it's kind of weird. We have the second event in Boston of the FedEx Cup playoffs, but it's not the final round. It's weird. Friday to Monday. Weird. But it's okay. It's all right. Just get me to the Ryder Cup. Actually, the Tour Championship and then the Ryder Cup. And I'll be happy. Great show again today. We're going to start off with a friend of mine, but I'll hold off on that. And in a little while, Curtis Mitchell, the director of golf for all our great Lexington Park and Rec golf courses, will join me. We got some important announcements to make about things coming up here at these courses. So I can't wait to talk to Curtis about that. And then, because I can, number one, right, Sean? Because I can. And two, because I think it was really interesting, my brother Mitchie is going to join us. A conversation that Mikey, hi, Mikey, out there in the barn. I tell a little secret. Conversation Mikey and I had with my brother Mitch, who this past week played in the World Amateur Handicap Championship in Myrtle Beach. 3,500 golfers on 60 golf courses. That's right. You heard it right. We'll talk to Mitchie, and you'll hear a really, really fun conversation. All that's coming up. But once again, here's another one of these, well, one of the very few, because he's one of my favorite people who I've never met in person again, but someday that will happen. Tom Patry joining me now, one of the great teachers of all time in America, maybe in the world. Go to TomPatry.com, TomPatry.com. And you can check it. There's too many things for me to explain exactly who he is. He's one of the world's great teachers. That's all I'm going to say. Hi, Tom.
Matt, how are you, my man? Nice to be with you today.
Thanks for joining me. You are a very busy guy. You are en route. Tell us where you're in the car. Tell us where you're going.
I am, Matt. I have had two wonderful days off, and that's two in the last 60. I was camping out and hiding in Portland, Maine, and now I'm driving from Portland, Maine to Greenwich, Connecticut, quick change of clothes, over to Westchester Country Club to practice a little bit this afternoon and play golf with some clients in the morning, up early, driving to Atlantic City, New Jersey for a two-day junior tournament I'm coaching at down there, back in the car. Back to Long Island for about 14 days of teaching in the New York metropolitan area. And then don't ask me after that. I have to look at my calendar, but it's not going to be in New York. It'll be somewhere else after that. Oh, I think I'm going to Baltimore after that.
Seriously. I mean, I have no idea how you do this. It's pretty amazing. But your talents are needed in a lot of different places. It's as simple as that.
I don't know about needed, Matt, but thank God requested anyway. I'm
yes.
not sure about needed.
Yes. I want to ask you, I got obviously a million things to ask you, but we don't have enough time for that. But I want to talk to you first about Brooks Koepka, because people talk about him even after this tournament is a couple weeks ago already, the U.S. Open. When you watch his swing, what is he doing that's allowing, he and Dustin Johnson seem to be the two guys, almost the same type swing with that bowed left wrist at the top. What is that something we can do, or is that totally ridiculous?
Well, Matt, that's a great question. Actually, I was really fortunate this year. I'd never seen Brooks up close much in person. And this past June, I spent 8 days on the practice tee inside the ropes at the U.S. Open in Shinnecock by invitation. And it was a great experience. But so I got to see Brooks really up close for 8 straight days. First of all, what a beautiful athlete. I mean,
yeah.
If you gave him a basketball or a football, he would do, or a baseball bat, I think he'd do just as well. He's a really big boy, first of all. I mean, he's a really well put together young man. He's strong as an ox.
Yeah.
And the position you're talking about at the top is not something I would teach the average player. It's a very very flex left wrist condition, borderline shut club face. And to only play from a club face that's that shut, you have to have the ability to rotate really hard and really fast through the golf ball to take the left side of the golf course out of play. So a lot of that's based on speed and timing and actually physical strength to some degree too. So no, it's not something I teach the average player, but man, when you have a guy that's that talented and can move his lower body rotation that quick, it generates an awful lot of speed and consequently ball goes very far.
Yeah. I mean, he made a comment. I love this comment. Everybody talked about him, especially at Belle Reve, hitting driver when other guys were laying up. He said, I want a wedge in my hand from, after a 330-yard drive from the rough rather than a 6-iron from the middle of the fairway every time. And I thought that was that's his game exactly.
Yeah, I think that what we look at now in conditions, Belle Reve, he had the advantage there of playing out of some rough conditions to very, very soft green.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if his strategy would have been the same if the rough was long and the greens were firm.
Right.
So, he played into a condition that benefited him. So I think you have to evaluate that on a case-by-case basis. He has the ability to drive the ball long ways. Here's the other thing people have to understand. He drove the ball extremely straight that week. If he'd gone in there, maybe not driving it straight, again, I think maybe the strategy would have been a little different. But here's the other thing. He put a driving iron in his hands, and he hits a 280.
Yeah.
So it's not like by putting a driving iron in his hands, he's giving up a whole hell of a lot. People don't understand at home. They don't really understand until they see it in person how far 280 to 340 actually is.
Yeah.
The guys hit it so far, it can overpower the golf course with their length, and for the most part, hit it relatively straight, too.
Have you've been watching golf, obviously, for a long time, not only on the amateur level, but on the pro level. What are your thoughts about, there are a lot of people who think that, you got guys like Justin Thomas, who weigh 150 pounds, hitting it 320 and 330 off the tee. There are a lot of people that think this has gotten way out of hand. They're hitting 6-irons, 230. What are your thoughts on all this going on in golf now?
I think we look at different eras in different sports, whether it's the evolution of the football quarterback going from, a 6-footer to a guy that's 6'6", that's 250, to point guards in the NBA being 6'7 or 6'8, to, the sport of boxing. We can go on and on, track and field.
Right.
I think that the world has changed. I think that golf has changed and evolved. It's gone from a strategic finesse game to a power game, and I think that we're only kidding ourselves if we think we're going to turn back the clock. I got to admit, man, I really thought this for a long time, being a traditionalist. But, let me give you one example. We played the U.S. Open at a place called Marion a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That they promised us was an outdated, too short golf course for the U.S. Open. Well, the winning score was right around par at Marion. So there's different ways to defend the golf course. I think course setup is a very important thing. I think we're really, really kidding ourselves when we think we're going to turn back the clock on the ball technology. It's gotten already way far down the road. And I think the USGA has made some really bad decisions the last couple of years, whether it be course setups at the U.S. Open or the long putter situation or square grooves. The USGA, I think, is to some degree got their head in the sand. And, listen, the game has changed.
Yeah.
Embrace the fact that the game has changed. Let's move on. Let's figure out different ways to defend the golf courses. And it doesn't have to be by length alone.
All right. Something that we talked about, maybe speaking about on this show, talking again with Tom Patry, go to TomPatry.com. This website is phenomenal. There's so much stuff on here. It's just a great website. Your list of accomplishments is too long to read. I'll say it again. It's ridiculous. Anyway, we have the Ryder Cup coming up. And I thought maybe we'd talk about the team and who's going to be the picks and all that. But when I first was introduced to you, as everybody that listens to this show knows, my hero is Seve Ballesteros and has always been. His name is part of my email address and has been since I got one many years ago. And you worked with Seve. You mentioned Westchester Country Club. You worked with Seve. Tell us a couple of things about Seve in relation to his Ryder Cup career as we're getting close to it.
Well, you're talking about something that's very dear to my heart now, Matt. I mean, Seve was a guy that I was fortunate enough to become friends with during my time at Westchester in the 90s. I think the first thing I have to say is he was a very, very, I think, a very, very misunderstood guy, extremely intense competitor. He's obviously maybe known or criticized sometimes for his gamesmanship in match play, especially at the Ryder Cup. Off the golf course, one of the sweetest people you ever want to meet in your life.
And yeah.
Extremely, extremely, extremely kind to me. He reinvented the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup was dead. It was over. The U.S. dominated the Ryder Cup. It was not a fair match. It was a pillow fight, basically. And he came along and reinvigorated the Ryder Cup when they added, the European side
right.
to the British and Ireland team. So one of the great match players of all time, gamesmanship off the charts, incredible shot maker, very charismatic, and saved the Ryder Cup. He saved the Ryder Cup. He single-handedly saved the matches. I think that you look at the young European players today who still revere Seve Ballesteros, and every time there's a microphone put in front of their lips.
Yeah,
he had a tremendous impact on European golf, on world golf, and we don't really give him credit for what he did to the shaping of the game, through the 90s. Incredible stuff.
I agree 1,000%. I'm actually friends with his son Javier on Twitter now, and he posts just incredible pictures and things about his dad, and it's fantastic. All right, before I let you go, I'm sitting here looking at the cover of the October issue of Golf Tips, which is a pretty big magazine, buddy, and you're on the cover here. It says, blast off, go deep with top 30 teacher Tom Patry. And you're in a position that I have never once in 30-plus years of playing golf achieved. I don't even know what that is. And I don't think I will know until I actually get to physically be with you. How about that?
Well, first of all, let's back up a second. the Golf Tips have been very gracious to me. They've obviously gave me the cover this October issue, but they've also put me on their masthead as one of their contributing editors. Now they've asked me to be a co-chairman in selecting their top 30 teachers going forward.
Wow.
So they've been very, very kind to me. The second thing is, I've also never appeared on Saturday Night Live or made a film. I'm really not that talented, and
yeah.
You probably outweigh me in the talent department. Here's one of the things I want to accomplish this winter. This would be a big feather in my cap. I want you to get your rear end on an airplane this winter and come to Naples, Florida and spend a couple of days. Let's have a little fun and knock it around a little bit.
I am promising you I will do that.
I want every listener to hear what you just said. Say
yes.
That word again.
I am making you a promise that I will come to Naples for a couple of days. Okay. How's that?
And then bring Sal with you.
I will bring Sal. As a matter of fact, I can't still fit into that wardrobe. I can say that. But I can get a hairpiece that will make my hair look like it did back then. What are you laughing at, Sean? That's not that funny. All right.
Bring a second one for me, too.
Oh, okay. You're the greatest, Tom. I can't thank you enough. And everybody that's listening, if go to TomPatry.com. I am about to, when we get done, look at something called Hammer and Nail, Putt and Chip. Your tips are fantastic. You're just one of the great ones, and I really appreciate you on your drive taking some time with us this morning. Thanks, pal.
Matthew, it's always a pleasure being with you, pal. I'll do it anytime you ask me, and I hope I see you this winter soon, pal.
Okay. See ya. Be careful.
Thanks, sir. All right. Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.